Welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. It's our Thursday edition, and I'm your host, Steve Stewart. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. Don't forget to like us on Facebook at Above the Fold. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Epps Decorating Center. If you're a homeowner, you should always be looking for ways to increase the value of your home, but it doesn't always have to be a major project. A fresh coat of paint can transform the interior and exterior of your home in a dramatic way, and I recommend you start with a visit to Epps Decorating Center, Tallahassee's premier Benjamin Moore paint retailer. Whether you need interior or exterior paint, high-end or commercial-grade coatings, Epps Decorating Center is ready to serve you. Give them a call at 385-6649. That's 385-6649, and we appreciate their sponsorship. And again, welcome to Above the Fold, an hour of detailed information on not only just local information, but we've got a big state story that we're going to talk about. And if you follow the news and you're not under a rock, you know that Nikki Fried was teasing her announcement on June the 1st. And sure enough, she did make that announcement. And she says she is ready to run for governor in a 2-minute video that was released. However, Tallahassee Reports was able to, based on a tip, break a story about what she did just before she made that announcement, just a couple of days. And it goes back to the reporting that we've been doing on Ms. Fried for the last year and a half or so. It relates to finances, financial disclosure forms, her relationships with a gentleman who is who's made millions in the medical marijuana industry. And so we're going to spend the next segment talking about, first of all, how this story was broken by Tallahassee Reports and then went viral. We were cited in the Miami Herald, Tampa Bay Times, FloridaPolitics.com. We were cited by Newsweek, a national publication. And so it's interesting how a 270-word story can get such traction, but it created a lot of buzz on Twitter, and we'll see if it continues to be an issue for Ms. Fried. But the nuts and bolts are, it revolves around money and marijuana, and when you get those two things together, you know, it's can be very volatile. And so the day that she announces, they did issue a statement responding to some of the concerns about what she did 3 days before her announcement. But we'll get into details of that in the next segment. So stay tuned about that, because this story says so much, you know, first of all, about the governor's race and now the primary with Charlie Crist, and how important disclosure and transparency is. But the backstory is also how the media dealt with this. And listen, I talked to a number of people on the phone. I got some good stories about talking to people who are very interested in getting to the truth and giving credit where credit is due. And there are also other people out there that that are, you know, trapped in a media climate that's not going their way. And they're forever, I think, have a chip on their shoulder. But, you know, journalism has changed. And, you know, I think I've sort of figured out how the best way to move forward for Tallahassee Reports. And it's just interesting to see the different perspectives. But so I'll share some of that with you also. And we may go on into the, two segments with the Fried story. Pivoting here locally, City Commission met last night on Wednesday, and we'll get into just a couple of issues they dealt with here. They put out an agenda, and, you know, a lot of those items tell you ahead of time what's going to be discussed and how things are going to go. Compared to the blueprint meeting last Thursday, this City Commission meeting was very short. But there are a couple of items on the agenda I wanted to touch on. We'll do that at the bottom of the hour. Ranging from the clean energy that we've discussed. Very interesting presentation on the culture, the ethics culture of the city of Tallahassee. Probably three different points I want to make on that. Dennis Sutton, who's the city auditor, presented that, and I thought that was a very worthwhile audit and some findings that really support where the community is on this. So it'll be interesting to run through those. And also in the sharing of ideas segment, got to watch a little bit of that. A lot of it was focused on law enforcement. Jeremy Matlow, you know, raising questions about body cameras and what we can do to, I think, be more consistent in having that body camera footage, because it goes a long ways in really letting people know what's going on in these incidents. And so we'll discuss that. The county commission released their agenda for their meeting on Tuesday. And a couple of things we want to go through there. Again, nuts and bolts issues, taking action on Meridian Road after a tragic accident there. We'll get into details about that. The Children's Service Council is on the agenda to talk about that. And also a discussion on, you know, what to do with $1.8 million, which is looking for a home in the arts community. And we'll deal with that. But the thing you want to stay tuned for on the Leon County Commission meeting is this JDL, see, I'm not sure what they call it here. Let me look. It's a, this item seeks board consideration of the Anti-Defamation League's resolution condemning hate and extremism. Now, you know, you're going to want to stay tuned and hear exactly what's in this, this resolution, because, the condemning hate and extremism makes it look pretty, you know, I guess non-threatening would be a good word. But this is only after a certain kind of hate and extremism. It leaves out some other hate and extremism, but sort of identifies specific hate and extremism. And so I'll go through what this, I don't know how this ended up on the agenda, but here it says that it was requested by the board at the May 11th meeting. And so, I will tell you that it's I don't know. I don't know how they're going to deal with this. It'll be interesting to see. This evidently is being peddled around to different counties. No counties have adopted it yet. A couple of cities, but we'll go through this and give you an idea of what the goal is and what it addresses. But you know, this again is getting back to the point, you know, where local politics, local governing, you know, by cities and counties are being forced to address these national issues. And it just further divides people in our community. And we've got leaders that step up and do it when they really don't have to. They could just be, you know, they could be just dealing with the nuts and bolts of what's going on in their community, but they feel this urge to try to get involved with these very ideological, emotional issues. And, you know, and then what they do is when they do get involved with it, it's not a nuanced debate. It follows the trend that's going on nationally where it's just their side of the issue. And, you know, living in Leon County where we don't have a elected Republican official, you get basically the left's talking points on a lot of these issues that are much more nuanced than just yelling out one or two word sayings and thinking that you're responding to voters. This possible resolution that is before the county, I think, is in that vein. It just, again, it's forcing the county to take issue with things that aren't issues here in Leon County. It will be interesting to see how they deal with it. We'll run through that. All right, but when we get back, we'll pivot back to the state story on the new gubernatorial candidate who got in on June 1st and then had to answer some questions related to her finances. We'll explain how that story got broken and what the implications are when we get back. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold. You never take advice. Someday you'll pay the price, I know. Hi, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. Thanks for joining us on this Thursday edition. I'm your host, Steve Stewart, and we're going to talk about Nikki Fried now. First, couple of things up front. Form 6 financial disclosure forms are the forms that elected officials have to file when they're in office. The detail, basically, where they're getting their income from and their net worth, which gives their assets and liabilities. Now, as I said, these are things that they need to, they're required by law, Form 6, to fill out when they're elected officials. Before they are elected officials, they also have to fill these forms out when they're running for office. And so those are filled out and housed by the Department of Elections. Florida's Secretary of State houses those forms. And so Nikki Fried, when she started running in 18, she had to file one right away. And it reflected what was going on finances in 2017. And then after that, she's got to file them every year. She won, so she's got to file for 2018. And so, again, these forms they're supposed to help people keep an eye on what elected officials are doing to make sure they're not benefiting illegally or unethically from their offices. And, you know, for it to work, it requires you to be honest. And you would say, well, why is someone going to, you know, fill out a form if they know that it's going to, you know, determine that they are doing something illegal or unethical? Well, illegal, I can understand. Unethical, people may think, hey, look, this is what I'm doing. And they may have to weather the storm of some questions and maybe they have to make some changes. But anyway, these forms, you know, I've reviewed these forms for years. They are full of really good information. The city of Tallahassee now requires them for their elected officials. Most county elected officials have to fill out Form 6. And so that's a bit of a precursor to what we're going to talk about now. So Nikki Fried has had a problem filling these things out since the very beginning. And we, in our coverage of Nikki Fried, while she mostly has been elected, is where our coverage is focused on, is really looked at these financial disclosure forms. We initially broke a story about how her net worth increased from about $250,000 to a little over $1 million, $1.2 million, $1.3 million. And, you know, the issue there was she was, when she got elected, she was basically moved in with a person who gifted her half the value of a $750,000 home. There was other questions about a trust that she had set up. But to be clear, the issue here is how many times she's had to amend these forms. Well, what happened was she was set to announce her candidacy on June the 1st, and she did do that. She announced in a video, but I got a tip a couple days before that, not long, maybe a day, that she had amended again 2018 Form 6. Now, the 2018 Form 6 would have been the year that she was running for office. And so she got elected, won the election in November of 2018, and then was installed in January of 2019 to the Agriculture Commissioner position. So I thought it was a little odd that she'd be amending it 3 days before her announcement to run for governor. And so we did we looked at the amendment and we filed a 260-word story on the amendment, which basically said she forgot to disclose about $280,000 in income on her 2018 financial disclosure form. Now, what's a little bit odd about that is that she had previously amended the 2018 form in 2020 to say that she forgot to declare about $72,000 in income. Now, so if you add those up, that's $350,000 in income that she says she forgot to disclose in 2018. Now, we went with this story and it went viral pretty early. The tweet on the story probably has now close to 300,000 impressions. We had national recognition from the story. We were cited by Newsweek, the Miami Herald did a follow-up story and cited us. Tampa Bay Times did the same thing. Florida Politics did a story and cited Tallahassee Reports. Politico did a story and did not cite us. We'll talk about that more later. The point, though, that this was a big story in the sense of what it had to deal with. Now, so you say, how do you forget $350,000? Well, it gets better because after we wrote that story about her amending the 2018 Form 6, I discovered by looking through some documents that she also, at the same day, amended 2017. And so on May 28th, 2021, 3 days before she announces for governor, Nikki Fried amended two financial disclosure forms. Now, the 2017 amendment said that she had forgot to include another $80,000 in income. So now, if you add this all up, she is she, you know, forgot or did not disclose because she didn't understand the disclosure form, over $400,000 in income. Now, the Miami Herald reached out for them to the Freed campaign to get a statement. From what I understand, it wasn't a phone call, it was more of a text message. Their position, it was very technical in the sense that they did not understand how to fill out the form, and that as soon as they did, they quickly fixed what was wrong with the forms. Couple problems there. First of all, it's hard to believe that they just found out about this 3 days before her declaring for her run for governor. The second thing is, this is not their first time that they've amended this form for the exact same reason, to change the amount of income that is reported in this form. So back in January of 2020, they edited or amended the 2018 form to add $72,000. So at that point, why didn't they just go ahead and include the other 280 on that 2018 form? So there's a little bit of issue there in terms of their answer. Now, this will get lost in the shuffle unless somebody in the media actually wants to keep digging on this. And there's some reasons to think that they may keep digging, and here's why. This money is related to, was the source of this money was from a nursery, San Valesco Nursery, which has a medical marijuana license. And this is the company that Nikki Freed was lobbying for in 2016, 2017, 2018, maybe before that. And yes, you did hear me say 2018. She was actually lobbying in 2018 and collecting money from a medical marijuana company while she was running for office or contemplating running for office. So, you know, a couple of theories here is that Ms. Freed did not want the people of Florida to know that she was getting paid by a marijuana company when she was running for office, because that didn't get filed until later. Now, this, you know, becomes even more complicated because of the fact of some other research that we did, which really didn't catch fire, which was her family's connections to cannabis companies. We talked about her fiance, who she was living with, Jake Bergman, who stepped down as the CEO of Sotera. He immediately, after she got elected, started opening up cannabis companies, including her family, which her father was a co-founder of one of these companies. A legislator's wife was involved with this, and also an attorney who Nikki Freed had appointed to a medical marijuana board. And so now when you see that she's made all this money, $400,000 from the marijuana industry that she failed to disclose, and you go back and look at her personal connections through her family, and oh yeah, don't forget, she also had a financial interest in a marijuana company, Harvest Health, which was just recently bought by Trulieve, which is the big dog of marijuana companies in Florida. And again, the CEO of the Trulieve board serves on a board that Nikki Freed created to help influence marijuana policy. So all this is to say that our story about her financial disclosure forms that she had to file, they were quietly amended without Ms. Freed pointing this out. We were able to discover that. Now, those changes are tied to a medical marijuana company. And now when you take that step and say, wait a minute, her family has got financial interest in marijuana companies, and now all of a sudden she's running for governor. And so it's a different level of vetting is going to take place. And we'll see if it reaches to the point to where they start asking her questions in person instead of letting her just send these campaign statements that are attributed to, actually, I don't even know they were attributed to an actual person. It was just the campaign. So anyway, that's where we are on the Nikki Freed story. When we get back, we're going to talk about a little bit of the media implications before we pivot to the city and county commission meetings. So stay with us. I'm Steve Stewart. You've been listening to Above the Fold. Hi, welcome back to Above the Fold. I'm Steve Stewart. I want to put the finishing touches on the Nikki Fried saga, which I'm sure will continue. We'll have more to talk about. First of all, one of the things I didn't address in the last segment is actually why did she decide to amend these financial disclosures? And that's a question that a couple people have asked, and we've pondered some theories. You know, the 2020 financial disclosures are due July 1st. And so maybe there was something that was going to have to be filed that was going to reveal that she failed to include these numbers last time. That's one of the theories that's floating out there. So I think that everybody will be waiting on Nikki Fried's financial disclosure form on July 1st. And I'll tell you, these forms, I like them because they have a signature of a politician on them, and then you can take that information and talk about it. And so you'll be seeing more of us, Tosh Schwartz, covering these financial forms. I know the city has just started requiring Form 6. The county requires it. So we'll be taking a gander in those also. Important to know the financial interests of the people that are voting on things. This with Nikki Fried is just undeniable. I got to tell you, I mean, with the marijuana interest and her advocating for it and actually using the Agriculture Commissioner position to push for positive policies with regards to marijuana while she's benefiting financially from these companies is just, to me, I don't know how it's tolerated. I don't know how it's legal, to tell you the truth. But anyway, now, real quick, before we pivot to the local stuff on how the media handled this, look, you know, we've complained previously about the lack of journalistic integrity in terms of citing people when stories are broken. And this has become a thing because of the legacy journalists. They used to do this a lot among themselves, but when the media landscape started changing and there was online journalism and there were blogs, it became a lot more difficult. I guess it became much more of a pride thing for journalists when they were scooped by, quote, you know, online blogs. Now, it's changed a little bit in the sense that I think these journalists now are starting to look at the online blogs and, you know, you get a level of credibility, and so then you can get cited. But there are still some outlets that just refuse to do it. Now, here in this situation, I'm happy to report, and I may not be so happy to report next week, but right now I'm happy to report that the people that covered this story statewide, the legacy media, and there are a number of them that did, Miami Herald and the Tampa Bay Times covered it. They both cited Talis Reports, a pretty influential political blog, floridapolitics.com, also cited Talis Reports. A national publication, Newsweek, also cited Talis Reports. Now, they didn't provide a link in the story, but they did put our name a couple of times in the article that they wrote about this issue. Also, we were cited previously by the National Review, which is a conservative magazine that's been around since the 50s. And so, you know, our work in terms of covering Nikki Fried is starting to get some recognition. Now, I will tell you, Politico of Florida did not cite Talis Reports when they wrote the story, and they were late to the story. You know, Miami Herald was able to get a story up about this. Now, they did break some news in the sense that they included a bit of new information. But again, they did not cite Talis Reports. They didn't cite anybody else, which I think is disingenuous, and it does not promote the professionalism that I think, you know, you need within the journalist community. And as I said before, this has been changing, but I think it's important. And you know, this is in the weeds. It's on Twitter, and you get the back and forth on that. But the person that did not cite Talis Reports, you know, the issue there is that it's not just us. They don't cite other people. So they get, you know, beat up a little bit in the Twitter world. And I don't know why they don't do it. You know, if it's a pride thing, if they don't want to cite a, you know, online news source, other people have learned how to do it. Miami Herald, Tampa Bay Times, Newsweek, for example. So that's a sort of a synopsis. Now, the Tallahassee Democrat has not yet to write about this. It will be interesting to see which way they go. The Orlando Sentinel is another paper that writes a lot of commentary and analysis of ethical issues, mostly obviously focusing on Ron DeSantis. So we'll see how they handle it. But as of today, number of major media outlets did cite Toss reports. All right, now let's get through the city commission meeting last night, and we'll carry on the city and county stuff till the next segment also. As I said earlier, the city commission meeting was very tame compared to the blueprint meeting last Thursday, which went on for a little bit over 7 hours. A couple of things I wanted you to be aware of is the city did finally approve a contract with the police union. At the meeting, the City of Tallahassee City Commission approved the collective bargaining agreement for police officers and investigators who are represented by the Big Bend chapter of the Florida Police Benevolent Association. Now, City Manager Reese Goad noted that the process was difficult due in part to the COVID pandemic, but he believed that the negotiation resulted in a good outcome. If you remember this, you know, they have been going through this negotiation since September 30th. Probably before that, because that was when the contract ended. They were probably negotiating before that, the end of it started. So, and you know, we had the billboard saga where the PBA bought some billboards that attempted to put some pressure on city officials. So now they have, the members took a vote, and the vote was 168-27, 86% favoring the agreement. So the ratification vote was moved to the city commission, and they moved and accepted that. The estimated three-year base cost for the wage component, which is the cost of living adjustment, is just under $3 million. And just a couple of specifics. You can get more details at TallahasseeReports.com if you want to, but there'll be no pay adjustment for fiscal year 21. There'll be a 2% across-the-board increase for all members in the next 2 years, and what they call a 4.5% step progression increase for eligible members, and a 3% increase for members at maximum hold, whatever that means. That is obviously, these are, as the city manager said, very technical negotiations. And we've got the, actually, you know what I should do is provide a link to the actual agreement so those who are interested in the details, even more details, can look at that. So I'll try to do that after the show. But you can get caught up to date on that by going to TallahasseeReports.com. Now, one of the other things that we talked a little bit about on Tuesday was this the audit of the city's ethic culture. And, you know, so what happened is they have a presentation by the auditor on this. And, you know, most of these audits can be very dry. And even this one can be dry if you don't look at it in the right way. But what they were doing was comparing questions from 2008 and then to 2019. And, you know, the questions basically go around of asking employees about specific ethics issues. You know, is it okay to accept gifts from a vendor? Is it okay to borrow city equipment for personal use? Is it okay to borrow $20 from the petty cash drawer and pay it back when convenient? So basic questions to get an idea, do they understand what ethics are? And so just for example, the one on borrowing the $20, I mean, you know, 99% of the people understood that this was not okay. And so, it was that way in 2008, it's that way in 2019. Now, what was interesting is when you got to these other questions, the city has a strong ethical environment. In 2008, the answer to that question was 83% agree or strongly agree. That has fallen. In 2019, the answer to that was 52%. So it fell a good 30%. And so city leaders set a good example by following the laws and policies that apply to their jobs. Again, in 2008, that number was 62%. Now it is 40%. So again, fell 20% on their on city leaders. Now, they didn't identify if the leaders are elected officials or staff, but so you can see a change there. If you look at what city workers understand to be ethical and then their impression of city leaders, their impression of what is ethical hasn't changed. But from 2008 to 2019, their impression of the ethical environment with the city and city leaders has changed. Now, the other issue that is interesting here is the question, since the leadership changes in 2018, now you got to understand those changes came after citizens voted to put in an independent ethics board, and they also The FBI investigation revealed some troubling findings, and then there were some new people elected in 2018. Since the leadership changes in 2018, do you feel the city is advancing in their efforts to be an ethical and trustworthy organization? 75% said yes, 25% said no. Pretty big. Now, that wasn't asked in 2008. That was a 2019 question. Now, the last thing I'll mention here, which is something they admitted that they needed to work on, and this is the city. It says, are you personally aware of misconduct or illegal or unethical behavior by city employees during the last 12 months? And so 18% said yes in 2019, 35% said yes in 2008. So that's less. But it says, if you answered yes to question 32, did you report it? Only 25% reported the ethical violation, where 75% didn't do anything. So they had talked about it at the city commission meeting, having to make people more aware or give them more opportunities so that they could report ethical violations, illegal or ethical violations. So anyway, all right, when we get back, we'll finish up with the city and we'll turn to the county. A couple important issues at the county to get you updated on. And so stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold. Out on the road, I've been down before. All right, welcome back to our last segment here on Above the Fold, Thursday edition on Real Talk 93.3. We appreciate you tuning in. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Spartan Stoneworks. One of the most common and cost-effective upgrades anyone can make to their home is the kitchen. You're almost guaranteed to increase the value of your home with an updated kitchen, but quality materials like granite, quartz, and marble countertops can get expensive. Well, not when you go to Spartan Stoneworks. Pricing will be lower than anywhere else because they don't mark up the cost of the stone materials. The way they see it, since they didn't carve it out of the mountain themselves, they're not going to charge any made-up fees as if they did. Great pricing, amazing craftsmanship. Give Spartan Stoneworks a call. It's 765-2037. That's 765-2037, and we appreciate their sponsorship. All right, a couple of things on the county side of the ledger. They got a meeting coming up on Tuesday, and we'll talk some more about this on Tuesday, but give you a couple of items that sort of caught my eye. First, the Children's Services Council has met a couple of times. They're getting their, they've got all the members together now, and they're trying to get some bylaws put together and figure out how they're going to finance staff. They're going to start collecting money, I think, in November 2021. However, they're asking, the city or the county commission to loan them $400,000 to get started. Money that will be repaid after they start getting some of the money from tax collections. And remember, they really haven't set, I think, the specifics on how much money they're going to be collecting and what the rate's going to be. We'll have to we'll check that out at their next meeting. But this is going to be a vote by the county commission to loan $400,000 to the Children's Services Council. Another high dollar item is the $1.8 million in tourism dollars that the arts community is trying to, I guess, appropriate in a way that will benefit their mission and their goal. And this has been sort of in a state of flux for the last couple of years. This is an issue that the county is going to take up. Not a small amount of money, but it's about creating an arts facility, one location. I think was going to happen, but now that's not on the board. They've got to change locations. And this is about $1.8 million. I think this will be a... it'll be an interesting discussion to see exactly what happens here. A lot of competing interest when you start trying to give out that kind of money. And it has to do with the money, I believe, comes from the CRA. I believe the city will also be involved where this ultimately goes. Now, two more things to get to. You know, there was a tragic car accident out on Meridian Road earlier this year, on March 29th to be exact, which killed two teenagers. And this sort of caught the eye of the county commission because it is a it was an area on Meridian Road, which is called a reverse curve or an S-curve between Gardner Road and Summerbrook Drive. And so they knew the location. They didn't get the full details. But obviously there's an issue there that Leon County wants to address. So they did an analysis which is included in the item, which will be presented to the County Commission. Crash data along Meridian Road between Gardner Road and Summerbrook Drive was compiled and analyzed from 3 years of crash reports. So that goes back to March of 2018. There was a total of 16 crashes during the three-year study period on Meridian Road between Gardner and Summerbrook Drive. Based on the crash report data, staff categorized the cause of the 16 crashes into three categories. Off-road departures was half of them, animal-related, which was 25%, and other contributing factors, rear-end alcohol. So additional findings identified that 16 of the crash reports included occurred at 11 of them occurred at night, 4 of them occurred with wet pavement. So what they're going to do is they've got they're going to get some money to make some changes to Meridian Road in that area to try to make it safer. And again, this was a tragic crash back in March that had claimed two lives of the three passengers. So anyway, that's something that'll be taken up. It'll be interesting to hear the discussion on that. Now, this last issue I want to talk about, I'll get your when I say it'll get your blood boiling, this is, we talked about it in the earlier segment where local governments are, you know, sometimes voluntarily, you know, interjecting the national dialogue into local issues where it has no business being. Much better to have local officials who are very concerned with our community and what is actually going on in our community. You know, as we talked about the police brutality issue that's going on nationwide, no doubt to recognize it and to then look at what's going on in Leon County. But we don't have a police brutality problem in Leon County. And you don't have to take it from me. You can take it from Sheriff Walt McNeil, who has said that on a number of occasions. However, we seem to adopt this national narrative. So now what is happening is a group called the Anti-Defamation League is shopping around a resolution condemning hate and extremism. The ADL is an international nonprofit and anti-hate organization founded in 1913 in response to an escalating climate of anti-Semitism and bigotry. It says here the ADL's mission statement is to stop the defamation of the Jewish people and to secure justice and fair treatment for all. At the February 25th, 20 meeting, the request of the Tallahassee Leon County Commission on the status of women and girls, the board approved a resolution for Leon County government to join the ADL's Florida Hate Crime Coalition. So that was their, that was the first step. And so when the ADL saw that, now what is happening is they see that Leon County has joined this hate crime coalition. Now they're coming forward with this resolution. Now, the problem is, you know, who's for hate? You know, nobody's for hate. How, except when you start identifying what kind of hate you're talking about. Are you talking about hate from people who don't like police officers? Are you talking about hate that is generated by white supremacy? Are you talking about hate that is generated by, you know, left and right wing extremists? You know, you start trying to put a label on hate, and then you start seeing where your motives are. Well, this, you know, this resolution points out that they are basically motivated by a fact, a finding that they claim says the 90% of extremist related murders were linked to right wing extremists. Okay, so now what they've done is they've taken extremist related murders, not just murders, but extremist related murders. And so this resolution, I think, is going to generate a lot of buzz in the community. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how the county commission relates to this, because this is actually, if you want to pass a resolution on hate, let's do that. But let's don't preface it with identifying certain categories and ignoring others. Now, I understand where I live. Leon County is a very liberal community. Black Lives Matter Matters Group has been celebrated here, despite some of the really notorious positions that they have taken previously without that even being called out. We've seen just recently, you know, vandalism on Christian churches in the Northeast. I don't see here where they're talking about anti-Christian hate. So things like that is going to be an issue. We'll see what happens with the Leon County Commission on Tuesday, and we'll have more on this next week. But again, this falls back to this point. Why can't we just deal with local issues in local government? Why must we let people who are trying to divide us continue to interject this national debate on things that really don't relate here? Anyway, all right. With that, I'll have to say goodbye. We are out of time. Have a great afternoon. Have a great weekend. And we'll be back on Tuesday. I'm Steve Stewart. You've been listening to Above the Fold.